Welcome to the Droma Preventative Health Podcast, hosted by the Jewish Orthodox Women's Medical Association. We provide you with up-to-date information on health topics geared towards the Orthodox Jewish community. This podcast content is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice or as a substitute for the medical advice of a physician.
Hi, I'm Adassa Stein. I'm a graduate of SUNY Downstate and pursuing radiology. I serve on the JOMA Teen Health Committee and am an interviewer for the JOMA Specialty Spotlight Podcast. The Specialty Spotlight Podcasts are geared towards pre-med and medical students interested in learning about different medical specialties. Today, I'll be interviewing Dr. Shlomo Minkowitz. Dr. Minkowitz is a neuroradiologist. He is an assistant professor of radiology at Weill Cornell Medicine and an assistant attending radiologist at New York Presbyterian Hospital. He attended medical school at Cornell, completed an intern year at SUNY Downstate and radiology residency, and a neuroradiology fellowship at Cornell. Hi, Dr. Minkowitz.
Hi, Dr. Stein. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
So our first question for today, why did you choose a career in medicine and what characteristics make one a good fit for a career in medicine?
That's a good question. It's been many years since my med school interviews when I had to answer this. I chose medicine because I found it very interesting, and I didn't think of myself as like an entrepreneurial businessman kind of guy, and I liked the fact that it was a structured career path, but at the same time, very intellectually stimulating and interesting. And so I went into that, and along the way, in terms of like characteristics, I think that it just, you have to be motivated, you have to be conscientious, you have to, it requires a lot of self-discipline, a lot of these traits that I think really start to declare themselves in pre-med. So any, you know, advanced pre-meds listening are already kind of having to exhibit these kind of traits. But yeah, I think just conscientiousness, motivation, and curiosity, you know, actually, you know, finding some of the stuff you're learning interesting is really important. Otherwise it can get really tedious really fast.
Yeah, I would say on the curiosity thing, it was very refreshing in medical school to be able to find a lot of people who got excited about the same things I did. We're curious about the same things I did. So you kind of can all nerd out together.
Exactly. Also nice because in college, you're obviously swimming in a sea of many different types. Med school is a bit of a self-selecting group. And so you're kind of with people that are probably more like-minded than you may have swam with in college. So it's nice. You can find a lot of peers that you, you know, really relate to.
It's true. And on the conscientiousness end, some people say, you know, why are we taking organic chemistry? Is this going to be applicable to me? But I think it also kind of selects for people who are hard workers and consistent. So it'll.
Yeah, I think I view a lot of those pre-med classes as kind of like screeners. So it's, you know, kind of gatekeeping, screening, and because it does require a lot of discipline and motivation and conscientiousness to kind of get through Orgo 1 and 2, if I remember correctly. So I do think that if you, it hones your skills. So if you've made it out the other end, okay, it's really preps you for the grind of med school. At least that's how I see it. I mean, Orgo is also interesting, but it's definitely a grind.
It's true. So our next question, can you walk us through a typical day for you as a radiologist and tell us why you decided to go into the field of radiology?
Sure. I'll start with the second question first, for the chronology of it. I went into radiology because, for the same reason I went to med school, which is really that I just found it really fascinating. The subplot of that is that, you know, in med school, I loved anatomy. I loved just knowing. I love knowing, you know, anatomy and information and diagnostics. And when I was on the floors as a third year, I used to go to the reading room a lot, and they were just really happy people. They talked shop all day. They found medicine interesting. They were friendly. They were humble. And I was like, I want in. I like this club. I want in. And I think that there's a couple barriers that we could talk about. As a medical student trying to look into radiology, there are some unique barriers because end of the day, to shadow a radiologist means to watch somebody think, which is, you know, the person doing the thinking might be enjoying himself, but to watch somebody think could be very, very slow and painstaking. So I think it's hard, it's sometimes hard for medical students, and I want to address that a little bit later, to expose themselves to radiology properly. I went into radiology because as a third year, just going to the reading room a lot and finding that I really loved what they did. And I loved the idea of, I loved the the huge role in patient care. So I would go to the reading room and I was like, oh my God, our entire treatment plan is based on like the differential that a radiologist gave. And the entire follow-up is based on, you know, and them sitting in their reading room, it almost felt like they were kind of this like secret, you know, back alley intelligentsia. They were kind of like calling the shots on so much of what went on. And I really appreciated that ability to apply all of my medical knowledge towards really just patient care and helping patient management. And I also just like the subculture. They were just friendly, happy people. That's why I went into it.
Yeah. Everything you said definitely speaks a lot to me. When I started shadowing or going to the reading rooms more, and then reading through the notes on the floors, I really started to realize what a huge impact they have on a lot of patient care. And also I said the exact same thing to a resident who I'm in contact with at downstate now. I said, I'm so happy to be part of this club because right. It's just such a nice culture. And exactly what you say, they're so laid back, happy. Right. Definitely can relate.
Right. And you said you're going into radiology, right?
Yeah.
So the listeners are getting just like a double bias. They're going to hear a radiology bias just through and through without, there's zero mitigation here. That's okay as far as I'm concerned.
I've interviewed a number of specialties at this point, but I really wanted to do radiology for a while.
Yeah, and also I think medical students really don't often have the opportunity to really get full exposure to radiology, and depends on the institution. I know some expose their students more, some less, but definitely what I tell medical students, and I guess we're a little bit off that question, is that radiology is not for everybody. At the end of the day, it's really not. It's a very specific and unique lifestyle, and we'll talk about that in a second. That being said, it is for some people, and for some people, it's fantastically matched. And I think that trying to find a way to see what radiology is like as a medical student is challenging. Like we spoke about, you know, if you go to the reading room and sit behind somebody who's not extending themselves towards you, you're literally watching them mutter into a microphone and think, and, you know, so, but definitely going to the reading room, investing yourself, saying, I have this patient, here are their symptoms, what's going on, what's the differential. You'll get to swim in the life of the radiologist, and you'll be immersed in their culture where, the differentials and the anatomy and the history. And really, I felt like medicine synthesized in the reading room in a way more than it did anywhere else for me. We were looking up the labs, looking up the path results, looking up the history. We were looking up medical literature while we sat there. It was really just so dynamic. And, you know, I spent many years in yeshiva, and I was back arguing over Gemara with my chavrusa, kind of. It was like this highly intellectual environment. And I'd watch some of the radiology attendings really get into arguments about something. Like they were heated, and it was just, I thought it was fabulous, like just such an intellectually, just so much intellectual, you know, really, really robust environment. So anyway, so that was why I chose it. And I'm very happy for it. I think the reasons why I went into it have really stayed true. They still apply, and I'm still grateful for it. But yeah, so definitely to medical students, I think give yourselves a chance. If you think you may even have an interest in radiology, hang out in the reading room as a third year. Go, you know, follow up on your patient's imaging, be open-minded to it. And we could talk a little bit about the reputations or the drawbacks that people have, right? People have, but, you know.
Sure. Yeah. So just hearing you talk is making me very excited for my career ahead. So I guess the first part of the question, how does a typical day for you now?
That's a great question. And I'm going to tell you what my typical day is like. I think it's important to start with the caveat that there's a wide range of what radiologists' life are like. I'll give you mine. And I'm a neuroradiologist, and I split my time where for half of the week, maybe more than half, I do outpatient neuroradiology work, which means just CAT scans, MRIs of the brain, head, neck, spine, you know, multiple sclerosis, brain tumors, strokes, that kind of thing. And then 1 or 2 days a week, I will actually cover the ER. So I'll do an evening shift. I'll work from like 4 to 11 p.m. I'll cover the Cornell ER. And that's just all comers, all modalities, all body. You know, obviously, it's tailored to the ER setting. So we're not doing like an MRI of the prostate to stage prostate cancer. We're doing ER type studies, but it is very varied. And I personally chose to keep that in my career because I wanted to keep my general skill set. So, you know, we do, and we'll talk about training in a little bit, but anyways, my life, just to stay on track, on the days that I cover the ER, we sign into my station at 4 o'clock or whatever, and the ER, it's like an open faucet, more like a fire hose. The cases just fly in, and it is crazy busy. And I'll be sitting there reading for the ER, and you know, now I don't always go on site, definitely before COVID, and still now quite often I'll go into the reading room next to the ER, and there'll be PE studies, MRIs of the foot for osteomyelitis, CT of the abdomen and pelvis for appendicitis, you know, stroke CTs, just anything that can, and it just keeps coming. And it's scary because every one of these cases matters. Like what you say will determine treatment. And they're just, I mean, I was on two nights ago, I think I read like 115 studies. And it was just never ending. And you really don't want to have any margin of error, right? Like obviously to err is human. We know that. That being said, you really never want to err. You want to be careful. You want to do well by the patients. You know, each one of these patients is somebody's father, mother, you know, significant other, son, daughter, and you really want to do well by them. And it's scary. It can be overwhelming. And as we sit in the reading room, you know, we'll have come doctors from the ER will walk in and talk about their patients. We'll have the surgical resident come in and want to look at something. The technologist who did the ultrasound will call and want to run a question by us. We'll have a question from the floor about somebody's looking for an NG tube. So it's a very, the ER environment, those days that I'm covering the ER are very fast paced, very busy, very multitasking. And personally, I love that. I love that I'm able to keep that as part of my career. And then the shift is over and, you know, that's you walk home and you feel sometimes like you've just been hit by a truck, you know, really like you're like, what just happened? Like that more often than not is how I walk out of these shifts, but I love it. I actually really love it. And the time flies. I'll sit down and I'll look at the clock. It'll be 5:30. I'll be reading. I'll look up. It'll be 8:30. And I'm like, how did 3 hours just pass? Time really just flies because you're so on, you're so engaged. And it's intellectually exhausting actually. Like it really is exhausting. So that's a subtle, you know, foreshadow to the claim that radiology is boring. Time flies and it is intellectually stimulating and really tiresome. The days that I'm doing outpatient radiology, you know, my day starts at 8. I'll be on site in the reading room or I'll be working remotely from home, log on to the station. And then in our particular situation, we have an outpatient list. It could be 100, 200 cases deep, depending on how busy we are. And it's the entire range of neuropathology. So any diagnosis, you're going from cancer, toxic metabolic, infectious, inflammatory, developmental, congenital, really just all sorts, and just screening exams. So, and then we just read. We'll start from the top and just read down. And the perk of that kind of outpatient way is that there's less frenetic energy that there's the ER. You know, it's not like, oh my God, another case, and they're kind of flying at you, and every one of these cases is acute. There's less of that. At the same time, there is like a slower, more methodical pace. That kind of like, you know, adrenaline junkie high is not there. So I appreciate having both of those. And, you know, when I read for the outpatient, I'll start at 8, I'll read till about, you know, 5 or so. And it's interesting because we have all our colleagues that we can, you know, ask questions to. We have an internal chat system. We'll look up some of the literature. We'll look up stuff in StatDX. It's a very, I walk away from my day feeling like I spent my brain thinking about medicine almost in the purest form that I could think of from med school. It's literally just anatomy, pathology, physiology, pathophysiology, just a whole day. And it's really interesting. And we get a lot of feedback from our providers. We get a lot. So as we're reading, we'll get, you know, an email or a chat or from one of the neurologists or one of the oncologists being like, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? So there's a certain social element where either we're socializing with our co-radiologist. What do you think about this? And can I get your eyes on this one? And it's like that kind of social environment. Or we're talking shop with the referring providers being like, what about this patient? What's going on here? You know, what did you think when the patient get treatment? So it's nice to be kind of the doctor's doctor in that way.
Yeah. I love the balance of the really excitement. And also, you know, you're more neuroradiologist, the slower pace. Also I think it's interesting because a regret I've heard from some specialists is that medicine has become so super specialized that, you know, you can only look at the right side of the body. You can't look at the left. Right. So it's interesting that you kept that broader picture.
Yeah.
And then to the doctor, that's also something that I learned, spending more time with radiologists, that some people are like, you know, I'm too social, I'm not going to talk to anyone. But I loved the interactions you have with the other specialists in the hospital. It was a constant teaching process is what I found. So the radiologist would call, you know, the surgeons would share some new knowledge to the radiologist, and the radiologist would educate them in turn. And I found those interactions really awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to use that to segue into something that I think is important, because, you know, there was the naysayers and I wanted to go into radiology. The two or three things that I heard most often were, number one, it's so boring. You know, you sit behind the screen all day, you have no interaction, there's no social element, you never get that gratified feedback from the patient. And I think it's important to address those and address those honestly. I mean, some of those are true, right? We aren't rounding, we're not in the OR. We are, at least if you're a diagnostic radiologist, you're for the most part looking at a screen for the whole day. And the truth is you're not getting patients. You know, I have a brother who's a surgeon, and he gets gifts from patients, and patients give him hugs after their surgeries. And you're not getting that. You're not getting that as a radiologist. You're really not getting patients reaching out to you for the most part, unless you go into breast imaging, which actually is a separate thing we can talk about, separate fellowship. But for the most part, you're not getting that. And some people really, they went into medicine because they want that. And if that's really important to you, that's important to know. Maybe radiology isn't the right fit, right? We have to be honest about the things that radiology is and what it isn't. In terms of the claim that it's boring and stuff like that, I mean, I don't find it boring. I find it really stimulating. I think that boring doesn't come from when your body is still. Boring comes from when your mind is still. Right? In radiology, your mind is not still at all. You know, we're sitting in one place, but our mind is just so frenetically working that time flies. So I literally don't find radiology boring at all. I almost don't understand that. I find it very stimulating. But yeah, I'm behind the screen most of the day. I like that. I like the control it gives me over my life. I like that if I need a pause, if it's not busy and I need to run and grab myself, you know, a coffee or something, I can do that. For me, I really appreciate that control and predictability over my life. But yeah, definitely, they're really, you know, the social aspect. I love talking shop. I love talking about medicine. I love discussing cases. I love, you know, the socializing part. I get that a lot in radiology. You're not getting the patient part of that. For me, you know, I did my internship here. I got some of that. There were interactions I had that were very positive and nice. That's not what personally is feeding me in medicine. And I'm okay not having that part. For some people, they need that more, and that's okay. It's important to know. But yeah, that's, you know, my thoughts on that.
Yeah. I do agree that if you need more of that, like feedback from the patient, if that's something important, then probably you will not get as much from that in radiology. It was completely not on my radar coming into medical school because I didn't really understand what they do. And I think a lot of patients don't, because it's more of a behind the scenes sort of practice.
Right. And I think the corollary of that is that to a certain extent in society, you know, doctors, there's still amount of like prestige, and it's like, you know, you're a doctor and you're a surgeon. When you're a radiologist, a lot of people don't really know quite what to make of that. You're not getting as much, you may not have that kind of prestige in the community as, again, it depends what community you're coming from. You know, I told someone in my community when I was in Crown Heights that I was a radiologist, and they got very excited. They said that their son took that course also. So I don't know what was lost in translation, but it depends on your community you're coming from. But yeah, there's definitely a different level of your ego won't be fed as much as a radiologist, not from the patients and possibly not from community as well. And you don't really have many people calling you a doctor. I mean, you're talking to peers all day. You know, I'm most of the day I'm Shlomo. I don't really, who's calling me Dr. Minkowitz, you know, which is just fine by me. So I think that definitely these are things to be aware of. That being said, that's why I think third year is so important. Third and fourth year, third year of medical school is so important, because you get to see, like, do you really want the patient feedback? Is that really what you need? Do you need, like, what really is what's driving you here? What's your motivating factor? And the third year is a hard year. It's tough decisions.
Yeah. So third year was the turning point for me. When you're actually on the floors, and we had an opportunity to choose two electives. So when I realized how excited I was getting by the imaging, throughout all my rotations, I was like, you know, maybe there's something here. So I chose to do a 2-week elective and absolutely fell in love.
And I think that that's a testament to the fact that you came into it with an open mind. And it sounds like you had some good radiologists who were willing to kind of share what they were experiencing with you. Because, you know, that's important also. But I think that's great that you gave yourself that opportunity and that you saw that you liked something and you went with it. It's very important to do. And third year's hard like that.
Yeah. So it's interesting what you're saying about kind of that subjectivity. The specialty that I interviewed for you was pathology, which is another area that this is, you know, AI is big in discussion in. And he kind of was alluding to the same sort of idea about there's so much variability between patients, like between what's, you know, they're physically made of, how they look, but also that call that you kind of have to make. So I guess that art of medicine is something that computers are not maybe naturally adept at.
As of today, tomorrow that will change, but you know, I don't think we know the natural limits, but I think that's a fascinating because pathology, I mean, I've gone to lectures as a resident where we had the pathologist present and I found it fascinating how they had the same dilemma where it's like, pathologist, just look at the slide and tell me what it is. And like appreciating how much nuance and difficulty and subjectivity and judgment calls and the art that they had to do. And it was actually very analogous to what I was experiencing in radiology.
What are some other professional opportunities for a radiologist?
That's a great question. So obviously, you know, having a job as a radiologist is the main one. That's your primary job, which is reading for a hospital or a private practice or a group where you're basically reading CAT scans, MRIs, x-rays, ultrasounds, et cetera. But because it's digital and it lends itself to remote work, and because it is, it lends itself to measurements, and because it is somewhat seen as data, right? It's actual data. You can actually look at it and hold it. It has other opportunities. So for example, first of all, there's the versatility of remote work. You can work from Hawaii for a group in North Dakota. You can work in Florida for a group in Oklahoma. It's incredibly versatile like that. You can take advantage of time differences. So that's from a clinical perspective, right? Clinically means we're taking care of patients, but we're taking advantage of the fact that it lends itself to remote work. From a non-clinical perspective, there are other opportunities. So radiologists can actually have a lot to offer when it comes to expert witness. So, you know, when there's personal liability, somebody's in a car accident, they're claiming that their shoulder got hurt in the accident. Very often, you know, they'll have an MRI of the shoulder and the radiologist will be called in and will basically have to kind of testify or write up a report saying their findings. There's medical malpractice. Because radiology is data, there's actual pixels that you can point to. It lends itself very much to being like, okay, I'm going to write the expert report. And say, yes, there is, you know, there was spinal injury or there was, you know, a torn meniscus and the pattern and stuff like that. The other area, which is a lot, which I've, you know, a lot of colleagues take advantage of is, let's say, for clinical trials, right? For a lot of oncology work, you know, we give a drug, is the tumor growing or is it shrinking? And a lot of those questions are answered usually by radiology and there's criteria there, you know, how to measure and everything like that. But so you can do a lot of that where you'll have huge companies that will have all these radiologists looking at their scans, measuring the tumors, applying the criteria to see if it grew or shrunk and stuff like that. So those are other non-clinical opportunities. I think that it's, again, from a medical student perspective, obviously you're not thinking how can I, you know, but just to know the field, radiology does lend itself to quite a bit of versatility, which I take advantage of, and I'm very grateful that it has that ability.
Yeah, I was introduced to a little bit of the, I guess, of expert witness. A radiologist in downstate does a lot of that as well. It sounded really interesting. Also, good supplementary income as
yeah,
well.
I do quite a bit of it, and it is fascinating. It's fascinating to see the radiology world through the legal world's eyes and to write a report. Very often I'll have to write a report to the lawyers and to the judge. And I'm trying to explain to them MRIs of like the spine or whatever. And it's really an exercise in communication and an education to a population that doesn't speak your medical jargon. And it's I find it really interesting. Like, you know, there's this thing on the MRI, is this acute or is it chronic? And these questions become really important. So cases like that, which I think are, I find it really actually, I thought it was just going to be like some supplemental income. I actually found it really interesting. Yeah, and the clinical trial stuff as well. I mean, it's fascinating to see the method, like to peek under the hood of how of how the process works in terms of measuring if cancer is bigger or smaller and stuff like that. It's really interesting. My doubt is that there's the academic setting, which is what I'm in, and then there's private practice setting. And that those are kind of two big watersheds. Academic setting, typically, it's less, there's less focus on like high volume output, you know, reading X number of cases, just getting cases out. At the same time, usually the compensation is higher. Whereas the academic setting, usually it's a little more breathing room. You have some academic time, you do teaching, you have residents. There's, depending on the institution, less pressure to output volume as if it was a private practice. And sometimes the compensation is less accordingly. Two very different models. The private practice model could be difficult. I mean, you have to be a high volume reader, turn out cases. There is, because burnout among doctors in general is a phenomenon, something that I think medical students aren't thinking about. Because you're just getting fired up. And the idea that you're going to burn out is you push that off, kick that can down the road. Burnout is a phenomenon among all doctors, and it is among radiologists as well. And I think that we'll talk to that a little bit later. Definitely thinking about different career paths, academic settings, private practice. Do you want to have more of a focus on just churning out high volume cases? Do you want a more of a laid back setting where you're doing teaching and research and stuff like that? But those are the different kind of models. My particular model is an academic setting. I do have that liberty to have some academic time. I could collaborate on a paper. You know, I'm giving a lecture later this afternoon to the PAs on chest radiology. Like, there's a lot of opportunities like that. yeah, so there's different models how to practice.
So what are the practical differences between diagnostic and interventional radiology, and how does the training differ?
It's a good question. I'll answer the second question first. It seems to be a pattern that I'm doing here. The training for, so radiology in general, you start with 1 year internship, right? That, you know, you start with your prelim medicine or transitional, whatever it is. Historically, before a couple of years ago, both people that were interested in diagnostic radiology or interventional radiology, they did a 4-year radiology residency. And then there was a plethora of fellowships they can do. One of those fellowships was an IR fellowship, 1 or 2 years, and they would practice an IR. That's the way it was when I was in training. That's the model I was familiar with. Currently, my understanding, again, because I haven't, it's just only in the past few years and I haven't been involved in the IR training. Currently, it's if you declare at your outset, for the most part, and there are exceptions, but for the most part, do you want to be a diagnostic radiologist? And then you do 4 years radiology residency and you choose a fellowship. Or do you want to do DRIR, which is where you integrate interventional radiology into diagnostic radiology. And then instead of it being 4 years diagnostics plus 1 year fellowship, you do 3 years diagnostic plus 2 years of IR fellowship. And within those first 3 years of DR, you get a little more IR time. So basically they kind of shave a little bit off your DR and fold in a little more IR. That's the training part of it. I think the main difference is that I think medical students are having to kind of declare their interest earlier. So it used to be that you could decide to go into IR as a radiology resident. And now I think you can still do that, but I think the classic pathway is to apply either for DR or DRIR. There is some overlap and some transition, and it's a relatively new process. In terms of the life, this is my understanding of it. They're very different specialties. Diagnostic radiology is you're a diagnostician. You're looking at pictures and you're making diagnoses. An interventional radiologist, it's basically a surgical subspecialty, right? And that's in terms of just your skill set, in terms of your lifestyle, in terms of the interactions, the patients, the post-op clinic, so to speak. IR is very much a surgical subspecialty. This is how I think of it. You're doing procedures, you have your own specialized little tools, you assess the patient before the surgery, you have anesthesia on board, depending on the case. So they're very different. And I've seen a pattern, and this is completely my own anecdotal observation, so feel free to discount it, but where medical students kind of are interested in diagnostic radiology, but it seems a little bit too blah, boring for them, IR seems like just the perfect blend. It's like DR and it's exciting and there's little, you know, gadgets and everything. And I've found the trend where medical students really seem to be gravitating towards IR. And it is, it's a fascinating specialty. And then speaking to residents, as they go through the radiology residency, they start to appreciate the DR part more. And they start to, and the IR, they start to just see for what it is, which is surgical subspecialty, and it's fantastic. And it has its own kind of, its own package. But yeah, those, so they're very different lifestyles. So.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I spent most of my time in third and fourth year in the reading room. And then I spent a little bit of time with the interventional radiologist, and it is, you're in the OR. So everybody's scrubbed. It's a very, I guess, more hyper sort of environment. I found that the people who went for IR were also like these very sort of like energetic people, I guess, who kind of feed off of that excitement of the OR.
I think that's the subculture part. The IR subculture is more surgical, both in terms of the personalities and the environment. And there's music in the, you know,
yeah.
And VR is just a little more sedate, which is fine by me.
So both were really interesting, but, mm-hmm. But yeah, I definitely think there was a very different sort of feeling.
Yeah.
Between the two.
Yeah.
You are a neuroradiologist. What sort of other fellowship options are there? And is it the norm to do a fellowship now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll answer the second question first. It is the norm. It is the norm nowadays. It's almost like a given that people will do it. Even among the attendings that I had as a resident, almost all of them had done fellowships. And for certainly nowadays, it's almost a given. In terms of the options out there, there's a lot of different options. I think that there's neuroradiology, which is plus minus the degree of procedures, lumbar puncture, stuff like that. There's musculoskeletal radiology, there's chest radiology, there's body radiology, there's pediatric radiology, there's emergency radiology. These are all separate fellowships. They're usually 1 year in length, maybe 1 to 2, depending on what it is. Something that I think is distinct, that I mentioned distinctly, is mammography, women's imaging, breast imaging. That's a fellowship. And I think that's a really important thing to highlight, because what's unique about women's imaging is that it actually incorporates a lot of those parts of medicine that are more patient facing, as we say. So there's a lot of patient interaction. It's also very multimodality. So in women's imaging, there's mammography, there's MRI, there's ultrasound, there's biopsies by ultrasound, there's biopsies by stereotactic, which is, you know, using x-ray. There's MR guided biopsies, and there's a lot of sitting with patients, talking with patients, managing patients. And those are the radiologists who do get the hugs after the visit, and they get the gifts from their patients. So I didn't go into it, but I did go, rotate through it quite a bit as a resident. I thought it was a fantastic option. And many of my colleagues go into it and they're very happy with it. So that is just the one thing I mentioned separately. Otherwise, there, all these things are, you know, MSK, body, cardiothoracic, neuro, peds, you do the fellowship. And then very often you have that option. Do you want to do only that limited focus, or do you want to kind of be a general person, read everything, but also have that niche? And that goes back to the question of, like, are you going to be an academic or private practice? Which is, you know, are you, you know, you, and you can model that. A lot of places say, hey, we want you to read everything. We'll make sure that you also get a chance to flex your subspecialty muscles. So read everything, but, you know, 50% will be dedicated neuro, for example. In my case, like I mentioned earlier, I've chosen to kind of do my ER shift, which keeps, you know, my general skill set. And then I do a lot of, you know, dedicated outpatient neuroimaging, which keeps that skill set. But yeah, tons of fellowships options. And the fellowships are pretty short, and, you know, they're usually 1 year, maybe 2 years.
That's kind of what I found as well, talking to the residents. Yeah. Neuroradiology is really popular, actually, in downstate.
Do they have a particularly strong attending? Sometimes that.
He is really, really, he's a great doctor, great guy. But also, I feel like all the attendings are great, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I went into neuroradiology because some of the radiologists that I like, you know, that really made an impression on me were the neuro. I just thought that their reading room was like, they were so intellectually invested. I mean, they all were, but for some reason, neuroimaging made an impression. I mean, also, I love anatomy, and the anatomy of, like, the brain, the head and neck, and it is so intricate and it is so detailed, and the range of pathology is enormous. I mean, just it covers every range of imaging, and the implications are huge, and you're dealing with the neurosurgeons and the neuro-oncologist. It just felt super, it really appealed to me. Again, just like everything else, subcultures within subcultures, there are subcultures in radiology, you know. Neuroradiologists a little more cerebral, a little more nerdy, but I mean, again, these are generalizations that are probably false, but I love neuroimaging. I find it endlessly interesting.
Yeah. I'm not so, I guess, in tune to those subcultures, but I have heard that yeah. even within the personality of radiology, there's a sub personalities.
Yeah. I mean, it rings true and yeah, who knows?
So our next question, what changes do you anticipate for the future of radiology?
That's a big question. The real answer is, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of speculation. I think that obviously now with AI, it's the huge, you know, and again, I'm not an expert in AI or natural language processing, machine learning. I understand the fears, you know, the fears have been spoken about at radiology conferences for years already. going forward in the future, I don't know. I think the job market for radiologists does go up and down. Sometimes it's a really hot market, a lot of demand. I know the one thing that does seem to be a trend that we can go to is that the imaging utility is just booming. You know, the CAT scans and the MRIs are just getting busier and busier and busier, more and more. That's what it seems to be. Imaging utilization is really going up. And so I think that there's going to be, unless, you know, pending a huge change in AI or these kinds of things, I think that the need for radiologists is just going to continue. Again, I don't know. I don't really know. I don't lose sleep over what's going to happen, even though it's sure it's possible. Who knows what's going to happen with AI and stuff like that. I really don't know.
Yeah, the second question I get after I'm going for radiology is always like, you know, ChatGPT, what do you think about that?
I think all branches of medicine are kind of in a vulnerable position. I think you can pathology. I mean, just being a diagnostic. I mean, you submit your symptoms and stuff. Obviously, some specialties might lend themselves more. I think radiology is very digital, and I actually do want to address this. You were about to say something. I think I interrupted you. What were you going to say?
But I do agree that I think it's going to be integrated to all areas.
I do think that there's a perception that radiology is particularly vulnerable to something like AI because it's completely digital, and the part that makes sense, right? That does ring true. But I think the other thing is that when I was going through pre-med and even beginning of med school, I thought of radiology as pretty objective. Like, okay, the bone is either broken or not. You literally went to 4 years of training to see if the bone is broken. I mean, that seems insane. A computer could definitely look at the bone and see if it's broken, or even if there's a stroke or if there's a this. Like, I had a hard time understanding how such a digital modality that seemed to be such a objective yes, no, is there this, is there not this, and is it this or this? It seemed to really lend itself. And the thing that really struck me as I started going through radiology residency was how subjective radiology was and like how much of a judgment call we were making all the time. And I think you'll come to appreciate this as you go through your training where, you know, I remember as a resident, we had this like skull-based MRI and the radiologists were, the neuroradiologists were disagreeing whether it was cancer or whether it was osteomyelitis. And these were like the two top neuroradiologists. And I was like, those are very different diagnoses. So one of them is like an infection, osteomyelitis. The other one is like horrendous rip-roaring invasive cancer. It was amazing to me that the two top neuroradiologists in my division were actually unsure and were disagreeing. And each one kind of had they were kind of like battling it out. And that was for me like symbolize what I've come to see very often, which is radiology is very subjective. I can't even tell you like all the time, numerous times on each shift, I'll be like, is that real? Is it not real? If it is real, is it benign? Was it there 10 years ago? I can't really tell. If it is something, is it a hemangioma? Is it a cyst? There's so much subjectivity that with every study, you're making like so many subjective judgment calls, which is scary because it's not as clear cut as you would think. There's like a lot of room for ambiguity.
So our next question, from the vantage point of a medical professional, you play an active role in the Jewish community. Can you share more about these initiatives?
Sure. You know, during residency, I'm coming from a Chabad community and, you know, I have friends that were going through medical school and, you know, we decided to kind of create some sort of, you know, network of Chabad people that were in the medical world and PA or RN or kind of all comers. And we ended up kind of getting together and having, you know, monthly get-togethers and we would learn medical ethics. And it was actually a really nice support network. and from there, I got interested in medical ethics and sometimes I would, kind of dabble in, you know, writing up some, you know, for, you know, Chabad.org, a couple articles on medical ethics. And also getting involved in like the Shomer Shabbos residency conversation, which is a big conversation. I enjoyed those things. I think it's really important in general to have things going on in your life that are not just medicine. It doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be leadership per se. It doesn't have to be Jewish community per se. But I do think that having these kind of side interests is just very healthy. So definitely for me, it's been these things, they actually took up quite a bit of time of mine. But I did them because I found them very nourishing at the time. So that was definitely something that I appreciated. And everybody has different things that nourish them. For one person, it could be going to Broadway shows all the time or being really active in, you know, in dance or whatever it is. But I think it's really important to have these kind of outlets for yourself.
Yeah, definitely. So our next question, if you could go back in time, given the experience and perspective you have now, is there anything you'd want to have done differently?
What a question, huh? So I'll answer that from two angles. From a career point of view, I actually wouldn't do anything differently. And I'm so incredibly grateful that I can answer that. I think it's really a blessing that I enjoy what I do, and that I'm happy that I chose medicine. I'm happy that I chose radiology. I'm happy that I chose neuroradiology. And I'm happy that I chose the career choice that I did that allows me to integrate general radiology and neuroimaging. So from a career point of view, I don't think I would have done anything differently. From in general, like over the course of training, I just think that not so much what I would have done differently, but I think that prioritizing self-care, prioritizing relationships, I think these are things that, you know, we hit the ground running from pre-med and we become these, like, we get put on a conveyor belt and we are just very often, you know, overachievers, type A, on a conveyor belt and single focused. And I think that in a way we have to be, right? In a way we almost don't have the luxury of just like, of like not crossing our T's and dotting our I's. But I do think that one of the things that looking back, what I probably would have done, you know, more of is really prioritizing friendships, relationships, just self-care, taking time for myself. I think it's, and part of that relates to the previous question about other interests. I think it's so important to not neglect yourself. And, you know, if you have children, if you're in a relationship, just to really, to nourish those relationships, make that a priority. It's hard. There's a lot going on and being pulled in a lot of directions, but I think that's a really important thing.
Yeah. So I just finished fourth year, and fourth year for any medical students who are in third year now is wonderful. So it's for the first time in a while, I can really do exactly kind of what you're saying, spend more time on friendships and things that I enjoy outside of medicine. And it's been great. It's been really great for my own mental health. So I'm like very determined to try to carry those habits into residency.
Good for you. It's super. I mean, honestly, tending to our mental health, for some reason, there's still this holdover of the culture in medicine of like, work hard. And, you know, I work for 36 hours straight. And like, there's so much of the culture of like, almost of masochism of like, of really like depriving ourselves. And that's a strong word, but I think that it's important to be like, no, I think it's stressful and people struggle. People have anxiety and people have depression and people have strained relationships and people have just feeling overwhelmed and insecure and inadequate. And we all struggle with these things, and to kind of air those out, you know, have a therapy, if you can take advantage of therapy that's being offered in your residency training or something like that. I think it's so important to really realize that there's no redemptive value to suffering needlessly, and you don't need to. Like, residency is hard. It's going to be hard. Med school is hard. And there are things you can do. You can nourish relationships, friendships. You can, you know, seek out therapy, which I think is really, really helpful. I started seeing a therapist during COVID, and I kind of wish I took advantage of that sooner. I think it's a really helpful coping mechanism. You know, when I was in residency, we had like this thing where, you know, if you needed to speak to a therapist, there was like in residency, there was like this, you know, program with the therapy department where they can do that. And there were times during residency where things were overwhelming and I had things going on, and I took advantage of that. And I'm really happy I took advantage of that. And I kind of wish that I had started regular therapy even earlier, because I think it's so important to because we need all the support we can get, and going through training and saying, it's okay. You're yes, you've come this far. You are an incredibly hard worker. You can handle all this stuff. You're also human. You're also going to struggle with emotional difficulties and so many complicated feelings. And if you have an ability to support yourself, either through relationships, with therapy or whatever, take advantage of that. It's really, really important. I think that's a really important thing that I can't be said enough.
So you already gave us a lot of great advice. Is there anything else or any other advice that you'd like to leave the pre-med and medical students listening to this podcast with?
Nothing that I haven't. I mean, just those things from a career perspective, you know, if you're interested in radiology, hang out in the reading room, talk to radiologists, see what it's like. And from a, you know, radiology has so many different options as a career. You can definitely take advantage of it. I think it's fantastic. And then just take care of your own, take care, you know, in terms of self-care, really take care of yourself during training. Don't suffer needlessly if you don't need to.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the JOMA Preventative Health Podcast. If you've enjoyed this, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and share this with your friends. For more information, check out our Instagram at JOMA_org. Check out our website, www.joma.org, that's JOMA.org, or email us at health@joma.org.